Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, Jeremy Cameron's fate, and was it a dog act or not? And where the Eagles and Dockers sit entering round 15.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Tuesday morning, it's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. There's a bit to talk about today. I have with me in the studio Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian. Quarters.
Duff.
We need to talk about Jeremy Cameron.
Two Jezzes today, Jeremy Cameron and Jezza Curno.
We need to talk about West Coast and whether they're in trouble or whether it's just a glitch. And
they're all right.
They're all right?
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Just wait till we start talking about it. And we need to talk about what Cameron's likely fate at the AFL Tribunal means for the Giants, because obviously that is going to have an impact on the season. There is also the hamstring injury to Adam Treloar, how that affects Collingwood, and there is also the gobbledygook at Adelaide, which
train wreck
just gets sillier and sillier.
Well,
really.
Let's start with the gobbledygook at Adelaide. I mean, if it wasn't bad to start with, I think that conference on Saturday has just exacerbated the situation. It's just, I came away from that more confused, less confused about the fact that a horror idea for a preseason camp.
So we know that clubs do interesting things on preseason camp. I mean, Adam McPhee nearly burnt the Kimberleys one preseason camp at Fremantle.
Adelaide have got a track record too. Nigel Smart and firewalking.
Nigel Smart and firewalking.
Which stuffed his feet for a long time, by the way.
That's, you know, they do interesting things to try and test their players' mettle. A lot of it, if it's not bonding the players, it's rubbish and it's a waste of time, because you become better players by becoming better at kicking, marking, handballing, decision-making and competing. They are the things that decide how good a footballer you are. And I just get the feeling that Adelaide has embarked on something that was never likely to make them better. It may have had a placebo effect on them. It made them feel, you know, more powerful or more confident, which, of course, results in better football, but...
Well, according to Rory Sloane, it made him a better father, brother, footballer, son, made him better everything.
Well, where's a blindfold? I must put one on and go ride a bus somewhere.
Exactly, that's right.
Can you give me a tape of the Richmond team song?
Yes, done, mate,
okay,
done.
Jolly good.
Look, I agree. And look, there is, with the whole collective minds camp, you know, I'm not so... sitting on a bus blindfolded listening to Richmond songs, you know, so what? But I think there are some areas of this camp that are now emerged, and we won't mention any names, but I think particularly with the Indigenous boys,
issues,
I think they've
gone
to areas they know obviously not enough about.
Yep.
And there's one particular Indigenous boy I know for a fact had to leave the club, go back to his community, because he was quite fearful of what had happened on that camp. Now, they're his beliefs, they're his understanding. So clearly, if that is the result of that camp, that's just a massive failure. And and the collateral damage, they can argue till they're blue in the face, it's clearly still there. It's clearly still there. Has it been the difference this year? No. Injuries have tipped them over the edge. But this has not helped. And the best tweet I saw last night, I know, and it escapes me who it was from, Dom Cassisi it was from, and that is that this group is arguably the most resilient in the AFL, given what they've been through the last couple of years with the death of Phil Walsh. And why did they need a preseason camp on the strength of one game of football? Because they had a great season last year. Yes, they had a shocker in the grand final, but they're not the first two. And I thought it's a gross overreaction. And now the collateral damage is beyond belief now.
So when you do these things on pre-season camps, clubs may argue that there's upside, but there's also grave potential for downside, isn't there? And that's, you know, I don't see any upside in this for Adelaide.
Well, what happens from here, Duff? How many, what's going to happen with pre-season camps now?
Well, I reckon at some point, a club somewhere should ask the question, if we spend a week away on a pre-season camp, what happens if we put that week towards developing a football skill we know we're not good at? What happens if we spend the time doing that? They do community camps. You know, there are plenty of ways to break up their pre-season. Their pre-season is broken up anyway by the Christmas break.
Yep.
There's also an eight-week break in between the season, the previous season, and when they start training again. There are all manner of ways to break up an arduous pre-season. As far as team bonding goes, they now spend about 6 to 8 hours together every day. How much more bonding can you do?
Yep, yep.
You know, I think these things, these are as outdated as end-of-season trips.
Yeah. I think there's occasionally, I know that in the early days of Alistair Clarkson's time at Hawthorn, the Kokoda trip for them was very useful in terms of they used the five pillars and they used that towards their footy philosophy over the next few years.
But that's about their brand.
That's right.
And about their trademark.
And they didn't go back there year after year after year. That was it. And well, they have actually gone back, but it's not an annual thing is what I'm trying to say. So yeah. I think as one-offs, they can be a good idea. But I think you're right. I think the time that there's so much time they spend together now as full-time footballers, and the time can be used so much better developing other skills.
And Quarters, what made Hawthorn a great team?
Skill.
They were the most elite ball-using team probably in the history of football.
Which was deft drafting and a few other things, and also allowing them to develop those skills.
Setting a trademark where if you don't kick well, you don't play.
Yep, yep.
Which has bugger all to do with walking the Kokoda Trail.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things in football. Please don't think I'm deriding AFL people, because there are a lot of things in AFL football that are absolute world-class cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
It is the toughest game to play physically, so therefore the physical preparation and recovery before and after AFL games and AFL seasons is elite. And it's elite by any standards anywhere in the world. And you even see little examples of when clubs get it wrong on a small scale. So you take West Coast's effort against Essendon on Thursday night. There's a reasonable chance that was a six-day break, long travel, and they didn't quite get the recovery right.
Yeah, and not forgetting, obviously, some glaring omissions due to injury, which is huge for that structure of that
side. But it all happened in the first quarter when the ball wasn't
that's
down.
That's right, and they're okay after that point. Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's a really tough sport to prepare players for. So there are absolute cutting-edge things in football, but there is some stuff which is just smart people doing dumb things.
Yeah, which was this, and this is an instance of that. Speaking about smart people doing dumb things, or otherwise, or maybe dumb people doing dumb things, Jeremy Cameron. Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt in terms of the contest itself. When I first saw it, I've got to be honest, I did utter the words dog act.
Yep.
I've since had a look at it a couple of times. I think it's a horrific incident. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that when he entered the contest, you know, he raised his elbow, whacked the guy in the jaw. I absolutely believe it's intentional, severe and high contact, and he should be getting a severe punishment. But I'm going to take the words dog act out of it now. I just think that it was the capacity to really maim.
I think
the opponent is there, but I've just got to be careful about that, because I think he's in the contest and it is a split second situation.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think if you're going to take the word dog act out of it, which I would, you've got to take the word intentional out of it. I've got no doubt Jeremy Cameron needs to get 4 weeks tonight. This is a horrendous incident. This is a player's forearm hitting another player's head at speed in a marking contest.
And let's not forget the damaged cause, because he's now got bleeding on the brain.
But I think you've got a guy hard on the lead against a guy coming back with incredible courage.
Yes.
Incredible courage. The way Harris Andrews came back, almost reckless courage.
And really interesting there, Duff. There's been a lot of commentary the last 24 hours, and we as, you know, bloody red-blooded Aussie males who've gone back of quite a few decades watching footy, love watching blokes.
I thought you were going to say go back with the flight of the ball.
Well, once or twice.
I did that once in my career. I ended up with concussion. I didn't make the same mistake again.
Yeah, I think, but we love seeing it. And I've got to be honest and put my hand up and say I love seeing blokes do it. I do. But it was really interesting, particularly hear Brad Scott last night, so talking about it, and saying he trains his players to have a look.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing because the consequences are...
Alan Richardson said the same thing.
Yeah, he did. So if that's the case, I think, and clearly that's going to have to go through junior ranks because that the consequences of what happened could have been so much more severe. If they're not severe enough as they are. Look, I think a minimum of 4 weeks would satisfy me. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets more. I just think at a time when there's a lot of... concussion is the popular word at the moment. Mm. And at the moment you've got veteran player agent Peter Jess with reportedly 100 ex-players as clients lining up for class actions against the AFL for concussion. I think that the tenor of the situation, I think you might find it's more than four.
Well, if that's the case, why didn't they do Buddy Franklin? Why didn't they do Ryan Burton?
No, I think it's a bit different to Buddy. And maybe not Ryan, but Ryan, again, I'm still baffled as to how he didn't, he wasn't suspended. Buddy's a moot point. But I think with Cameron at the weekend, you enter the contest, you've got your elbow up, you get the guy, and you can see from the immediate reaction of the Brisbane teammate, it just wasn't good. It's not a good look. It's not a good action. It's not a good consequence. They need to make a stand.
It's not intentional, though.
Yeah.
It's not. When you look at the... If you view this in perspective and context, the split second, the pace the two players are moving at,
yep.
And the fact that if you watch it from the two angles I've seen it from, Cameron has his eyes on the ball, but then he becomes aware... There's a body coming back towards him at speed, and he acts to protect himself.
You and I will never know whether it's intentional, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. You're saying he has his eyes on the ball, and I'm giving him that benefit of the doubt from what I've seen.
It's reckless. It's crude.
Yeah.
It's awful for
and
the
it's,
game.
And, it was, and look, it's bloody ordinary football action. If I was watching that and that was my Harris Andrews was my son, I would be... My blood would be boiling watching that. And I just think it wasn't an action. He's better than that. Look, he's gone 11 times, Jeremy. Admittedly, he's only been missed games twice.
Yeah.
But Jeremy has a habit of getting himself into silly situations. I think he has to start to have a look at the way he's behaving out there on the footy field as well.
I think the problem, though, Quarters, and this is where I talk about context and perspective, we want players to go hard at the ball. And... Before they hand down a suspension to Jeremy Cameron tonight, and he will get suspended.
Oh, no doubt.
And if it's three, it's unders.
Yep. Four would be satisfactory.
Yeah, I think four is about right. But I want them to ask themselves the question: what were his options?
Well, his options were one was not to raise his elbow.
Well, okay.
That's one option.
But my point would be that if that happens, so he either pulls out, which means we're all pillorying him, or he does what he did, which means he's going to get suspended for 4 weeks, or he goes for the mark, which means there's a mid-air collision between two players who are totally exposed, and we've probably got two players injured as opposed to one.
Yeah, I still think you have options other than to go in with your raised elbow. That's a bloody dangerous thing to do.
It's a split-second action.
Well, that was the point I raised initially. Yeah. That's why since looking at the footage, and I've looked at it again and again, and I've removed... Because initially, when I saw it, that's what came out of my mouth.
And don't forget that if you look at Darcy Gardner, who was the one that remonstrated with him, and he's right behind Jeremy Cameron, he was as mortified by the approaching collision as anyone.
Mm.
Because he takes action to protect himself as well. And he probably, if anything, slightly pushes Cameron forward into the contest. But it's probably not enough to mitigate against his raised forearm. But I would say, by all means, suspend him for a month because it's horrendous and it's crude. But don't call it an intentional because in a football context, there's no way this is intentional.
Where does it leave GWS? I think it leaves them extremely vulnerable. Now, I didn't have them in flag mode any longer. I know they were mounting a bit of... They've got some momentum at the moment. But I still don't... I still don't see them as playing the team football. The thing about GWS at the moment is they've got this beautiful midfield that's back playing and knitted together again. But I still don't see them playing that team game as opposed to that individual game that they've played in the past as Richmond is playing. I just don't see that, and I think he's a very important player to them, as is Toby Green, who's still missing. So I think it basically is a moment where you can say that's where the premiership was definitely lost for them.
Well, I want to see So they play Hawthorn at spotless.
Well, they can win that.
I want to see how they go in that. I think they come to West Coast to either the following week or the week after that. I want to see how they go. That's West Coast in Perth. That's a big ask. I want to see how they compete. But
with all due respect, right, because with all due respect to the Hawks, who are going okay, a victory over them at Spotless this week's not going to answer any critics, in my opinion, for them.
That's right.
So, I'm not convinced about them, and I'm less so now.
Yeah, and Toby, how far away is Toby Green?
Two or three, but they've been talking two or three for a while.
So in order to beat West Coast at Optus, Toby Green would have to play.
Well, in order for them to be in the premiership frame, they need Jeremy Cameron and Toby Green in the side.
Yeah.
And they need a Toby Green who's fit and with some continuity. So he can't be coming back 2 weeks before the finals. He needs to be in the side as soon as possible.
So let's talk about West Coast.
Yep.
Second loss in a row.
Yep.
Flat as pancakes before quarter time.
Yep.
And then wouldn't have hit sand if they fell off a camel after quarter time.
As flat as a whoopee cushion at a clown convention, Duff. That's how flat they were.
What happened?
Well, the two gaping holes. Let's start with that. So Darling and Kennedy, two gaping holes. That is a massive change to your forward structure. It changes the way you enter the forward line. It changes everything, really. So I'm going to start with that. Secondly, I reckon you're right about the six-day break and the recovery, because they just look like they weren't. You know, sometimes you see the ball bounced and you see this team's not ready for that right now. And that's how it felt for me, that game. They were okay after quarter time. And had they kicked straight, they were sort of a chance to at least push the Bombers to a goal or two, which is extraordinary, really, given the early dominance of Essendon. I'm not as concerned as some. Look, there's an interesting question while we're on the subject from Kit, who, by the way, reckons Jeremy Cameron will get five. He says, who can genuinely fill JD and JK roles? Is there any positive to take away, given the first halves you're lacking, to end up with more scoring shots, thus supply, or is this clutching at straws? One thing I don't want to see is Jeremy McGovern go to permanent forward straight away. What you're doing is, your forward line's been smashed because of those two absences. You don't want to do the same thing to your defence, particularly with Barras missing. So I think you need your defence as comfortable and as rounded as it possibly can be. So McGovern stays there for mine, unless you get to a situation, as you did late in the game against Essendon, where all hope is lost, let's just try something out of the box, which they did.
Yep.
So I'm saying leave McGovern back. He's important to your structure back there. And stick with what you're trying, I think, in the forward line. I'm hoping Lacroix's okay. Has a wrist concern, but I'm hoping he's okay. He's not going to be... I mean, he's been terrific this year. He's your two or three. But, yes, you're going to need someone else to stand up. And you're going to probably need a goal more from your midfielders as well, I think.
Yeah, and that's a concern, because Luke Shuey's come back. I haven't seen explosiveness from Luke Shuey.
No.
Since he came back off the hamstring. So, obviously, he's still getting comfortable with playing again after that injury. So, I want to see more from him. I think you're right. I think Lacroix is a key in. If Lacroix weren't to get up and they were to go to Adelaide to play Adelaide without Mark Lacroix and without Kennedy and without Darling, I'd be tipping Adelaide.
Well, I actually think Adelaide will win this week. And I'm not panicking about West Coast. Let's just... it might cost them top two, but let's just divorce ourselves from that at the moment. This is not this. Everyone has one of these shockers, and they've had theirs. And it was, I guess, a case of the build towards it. You've lost your two key forwards. You're probably due. Great sides can overcome that, as Richmond has done. They've had a struggle, Richmond, but they've still managed to win games. I still think it's pretty positive for West Coast.
Yep.
And that just one shocker, they can put that in the box, put it aside. They've got enough credit in the bank now to still finish top four, certainly. Yep. And and that's with a loss this week to Adelaide, because I'm expecting something pretty special from Adelaide this week.
So you think they'll make a stand?
I do.
Well, they have to at some point.
Yeah.
And they'll get players back. The word is that Tom Lynch appears to be pretty optimistic.
Fresh from a three-year deal, good to see.
Yep, so that's one important signature they've got. There's a possibility of Rory Sloane playing, and I think there's a possibility of Rory Laird playing.
Yeah,
so
well, they're three big ins,
three
huge
significant ins.
So, you know, that's just my early thoughts. It may change through the course of the week, but they're my early thoughts. Excuse me.
Lacroix has a good record at Adelaide Oval.
Yep.
So Lacroix would be a massive in for West Coast. He would also be a massive out.
Mm.
In the context of them not having Darling and Kennedy.
Look, he did finish the game, but there's no doubt that wrist is a bit sore. So I'm not sure what have you heard any feedback, Duff, on his wrist?
Not yet,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so West Coast and Adelaide, we expect a stand from Adelaide. Fremantle quarters can mm-hmm. get to 7-7 if they beat Brisbane, and of course Brisbane now will be without Harris Andrews, who definitely won't play for the next
and it's
two,
at home.
3 or 4 weeks.
And it's at home, so really interesting. It's a real logjam there. It's going to be they're going to have everything go their way, Freo, to be even a sneaky chance of getting into that eight. Because even without Hawthorn, you've got GWS, you've got Essendon, who are mounting a challenge. So there are other teams there as well who are probably ahead of Freo. But yeah, geez, keeps it interesting, doesn't it?
Well, they're effectively two games out because of their percentage. But I reckon we sat here in the preseason and we talked about what we'd like to see from Fremantle. And I can't remember the exact words, but I know I was thinking at the time, if they could get to round 16 at something like 8-8.
Yeah, it would be that's a winning season.
And it's like, it keeps your fans interested.
Yep.
You know, we've heard Ross Lyon talk about this dual narrative that they've got. Fremantle fans have, it's an outside glimmer, but they have hopes that if they could, you know, win this one, somehow cause an upset or two on the road and take care of their home games, they could get to 12 wins, maybe 13. 12 wins they probably just miss.
That's a great season for them if they get to that point, given where we thought they'd be.
Yeah. Yeah, they could also finish with 9.
I think they're overs for me right now.
Yeah.
Right at this point, they're overs for me for what I thought they'd achieve pre-season. So, you know, big tick, and let's hope it continues along in that vein.
Yeah.
And the Eagles keep powering on. I want to talk about North v the Western Bulldogs. North, two things about that game. North won a game they should have lost with the incredible performance from Higgins, who's having some sort of year. And also I reckon we might have seen, it's hard when you single out incidents, but that Wallace kick late in the last quarter, out in the full,
might be a career changer.
I reckon he's moving.
Yeah.
That he moves after that kick. That's the kick.
He would have copped it from the coach.
Well, the coach gave it to everyone, but I bet you he was right. He was in the frame for that one. But he's a bit of a whipping boy from all reports.
Yeah.
Apparently he's a good kid, smart, and we know he can play. So he'll be valuably chased by other teams.
And
I think he'll be...
You know what? The sad thing about it is you can see what he was thinking, because at that point, you've either got to be able to spot up a forward who takes a shot on goal, takes 30 seconds off the clock, or you get the stoppage.
He was going for a stoppage.
Or you get the stoppage.
That was what he was trying to do, but it's just a shocking kick. And when I saw it, when I was watching it live, I went, oh, no.
Yeah.
You've just dropped the ball. You've just dropped the World Cup here, because they're going to goal here. And the way it went up the other end too, really clever play from North, and Higgins was in that play twice, as well as Ben Brown and Jack Zeeble.
For a 200-centimetre player to understand that if he tries to pick the ball up, he's going to get closed down, so his only chance of creating something for his team is to soccer it off the outside of the boot.
Very clever.
Around the oncoming player, and Zeeble's alone in the goal square. I mean, Zeeble's alone in the goal square because Trengove made the mistake of thinking he could get to the contest when Higgins was surging forward. He didn't make it, which meant that I think it was Cordy had to come across to try and close Brown down. And Brown ingeniously realised that, okay, if I pick this up, he tackles me, stoppage, we probably lose. If I soccer it, something might happen and we might win. Just
the half chances you take, and when you're good enough, as Ben Brown is, to execute them, and Zeeble's good enough to capitalise too, that's what happens.
I like the doggies,
they were good, weren't they? Take Ben Brown and Zeeble out of that side, and you're a little less favourable about North, aren't you? They're a complete side, but I'm just saying you're thinking twice about tipping them.
Yeah,
that's the Eagles.
I think that what I like about North, and I did juxtapose this against Adelaide in my column on Monday.
I did see that, yeah.
And that is that Brad Scott understands what he's got.
Plays him in the right positions.
They play where they should play. You know, you don't see Ben Cunnington running around on a wing trying to get outside ball. Mm. He's an inside mid. He plays inside. Sean Higgins goes inside because he can play inside outside, but he's expected to run and break lines. When Ben Jacobs is playing, he tags. Ben Brown plays deep forward.
Yeah. The good sides are predictable.
Yeah.
You know where they're going to play. You know where they're going to start. There were no surprises with the Hawthorns with their triple flags. There were no surprises with Brisbane with their triple flags. When you got to the pointy end last year when Richmond was on that surge, there were no surprises with Richmond. You knew everything about them.
They were going to play.
And it's amazing, isn't it, how that settled side just comes up with the goods week after week.
Because if you're predictable to your opposition, you are definitely predictable to each other.
Yeah, which has been West Coast strength this year.
Yeah.
And that's why at this point there, as the point I was making is you take Brown and Zeeble out that side, you're taking Kennedy and Darling out of the Eagles and you're having the same results.
So quarters, where did you have Collingwood with 15 minutes to go in the game against Carlton, and where do you have them now that it's emerged?
There's still a chance. I had them as a good chance. Now I've got them as an outside chance. I think Treloar is that important to them. They have really good midfield depth. But Treloar is a different type of player. He's a real connecting player. And they've got some players that you just jump at having at your team's side bottom. And, you know, they're just some terrific players. He is that important. I think he's probably going to be the difference. But I'm still not writing them off because of the way they're playing and the way that forward line's functioning.
So were they top four?
Yeah, I think so.
And what are they now? Top eight?
Oh, they're top eight for sure. There's still a possibility to be top four. They're playing with that belief and that momentum. And I need a couple of weeks to see how they react to this. But
so they've got players to come back, don't forget. So Varko is just about due back. Elliot is just about due
different
back.
Different players to Treloar, though. I mean,
I agree with that. But Elliot, I reckon, is big.
Because, he is big.
Because they will put Dugowie into the midfield.
He hasn't played a lot of footy, you know, and I know that he hasn't played a lot of footy in the last 2 years.
But then Varko's big because he can go midfield and forwards.
Yeah.
You can alternate Dugowie between midfield and forward, but play him a little bit more in the midfield. Elliot plays, still gives you that punch in attack. I'm
worried that side bottom's going to have to go forward too much. Oh, sorry, he's going to have to go midfield too much now. That's all. I just like him forward more. So, but look, they have got depth, so they can overcome it, but it's a massive blow, and it's a real shame, real shame. I was loving watching them play, and I was loving watching him play.
Yeah, I think that of the three brands of football I was enjoying most this year, they were West Coast, Richmond, and Collingwood.
Yeah.
They were the three that, to me, had the brand. I don't like
Melbourne either.
I'm watching Melbourne, and I'm thinking there's real potential there. Geez, they lost one they should have won on Friday night.
They did. I'm still not jumping off. I still like the way they went about it. It wasn't a tick on a big stage against a good quality opponent, but maybe we're undervaluing Port.
It was a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was a great game. Great game of footy.
Really,
but so was Carlton Collingwood, by the way. And we should mention Charlie Curnow too. That was some game.
Yep.
As well as I think 20 contested positions. I don't know how many contested marks, but he took them every which way. There were some great hangs in that game. Hoskin Elliott's mark in the about four deep in the pack. Curto, a number of grabs, including that Jezelinko U beauty over Jerker Jenkins. It was very similar.
He's a super player. So if you're a Carlton diehard, and if you're still at Carlton,
oh, you need something.
You are a diehard.
And you need something, so, I tell you. And that was, you'd look at that and you'd go away with a bit of a smile on your face.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought there were some good signs from Wietering. I thought there were some good signs from Petrescu Seaton. I think Zach Fisher's been showing good signs.
He has been for a long time, you know, and they're two down. I mean, they lose Cruiser after half time.
Yeah.
They lose Plowman in the second quarter. That's a pretty good effort from them.
Yeah.
It was certainly the week before, it was the worst half of footy I've seen a team play in memory. That was a real, real character making performance from them.
And interesting that just getting away from them onto another young team, interesting that Luke Beveridge chose to spray his players after the game, because I liked what I saw from the Bulldogs for most of that game as well. I liked Billy Gowers. I liked Aaron Norton in attack. He was drafted as a defender, but I thought he showed some real good signs there. And I just thought their young players, like for Shaqy, is starting to show something. He needs to show more, but he's starting to show something. I just thought that was a, it was in most areas, that was a step up for the Doggies.
Yeah.
So I guess you'd have to get inside the mind of a coach to know.
It's not the first time they've been sprayed after a good performance. Do you remember the last time?
No,
it was the famous Terry Wallace quote. If I see one bloke happy about that, I think they'd come from a mile back and just lost. And it was early in his tenure. If I see one bloke happy about that, I'm going to spew up. That's what he said.
The plough.
Yeah, the plough. So good on the Dogs. You know, stick with them. There's still a lot to like there. And, you know, I've been impressed. I haven't always been Johannesson's biggest fan. But I've really admired the way he's gone about it in the face of all adversity this year. Bontempelli hasn't had an explosive year, but he's still been hard at it every week. And, you know, there's still a lot to like there at the Dogs. I'd love to see a second surge.
Oh, I think it'll come. I just get the feeling they've been a bit premature with throwing out the old.
Yeah.
You know, they've looked at players who played in the 2016 flag and they've made... Sometimes it takes players time to regain hunger and reset and really go again. And I just get the feeling they've been a bit quick to discard a few. And
yep.
And I think you're right about Wallace. I think Wallace is gone. And I think that unfortunate kick on the weekend.
Yeah, that was just rubber stamped it, mate. That's when I saw it, I thought, oh, see you later. Poor bugger. Well, he might be happy to move.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I think probably is. There'll be clubs that want him.
Yeah.
He'll get an opportunity somewhere else. I mean, the sad thing for him is that his dad has strong history with the Bulldogs, and it's nice to see those players stay. And you never know. Look, wounds can be healed. If their circumstances midfield change a little bit and they think, geez, we need Mitch Wallace, so there might be a contract dangled or something like that. But at the moment, you'd think more likely not to be there than be there. Well, we'll be watching with great interest when Jeremy Cameron fronts the tribunal. We will be back on Thursday to give you tips for this weekend's round of matches. It's going to be, I think, the next 2 or 3 weeks, quarters is going to be a real ladder shaper.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's going to be.
Always. It's a great time of year.
Yep.
Because it's everyone's there set, and it's I think did you make the analogy about the start of a Grand Prix? You know, they're all there in their starting grid positions, and it's just off the flag goes, and it's just a crazy scramble, and we see who ends up around the first turn and who's stacked.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think there'll be a few stacks over the next few weeks.
Oh, there will be.
I get the feeling there's still about 12 clubs who can play finals, which means that some are going to run off the road pretty quickly in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, and if you're a maintenance worker at any of the footy grounds, get extra tape around the phones, boys, in the coaches' boxes.
Correct.
I think there'll be a few smashed into a few walls in the next couple of weeks.
We'll be back on Thursday to do the tips for this weekend's round. Thank you for joining us for Tab Touch this morning.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.